Scare you?
Huh? Well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but I had no other way of attracting your attention. You're about to listen to the opening program of a new series, Three of a Kind. My name is John Brown, and I function on this program as the announcer, an office which I find slightly distasteful, since it's easily the least spectacular of my many talents. I say that unblushingly, because in the next 30 minutes, you'll hear all sorts of strange admissions, confessions rarely heard outside the confines of the psychiatrist's consultation chamber.
Interesting, isn't it?
Oh, you don't have to chase the little ones away from the radio. We propose to treat only the comic aspects of the psyche. However, if we should, by some remote possibility, touch upon one of your own private little quirks, you have my word of honor, it is completely intentional. The author, that is Phil Rapp, who writes and produces this diversion, has a profound respect and a deep admiration for the psychiatric profession, and begs forgiveness if any impression is created other than good-natured fun. Now, in a few moments, you'll witness the modus operandi of our principals, a small group of happy charlatans who are currently posing as reputable psychiatrists in their endless search for what is known as a soft buck. Suppose I let Police Lieutenant Wright of the Metropolitan Bunco Squad give you a little more detailed information. Come in, Lieutenant Wright.
Attention all precincts west of Denver. Wanted for grand larceny, embezzlement, forgery, and barratry. Whatever that is. Number one, Hanley Stafford, alias Moose Face, alias the Doctor, medium height, athletic build, early 40s, brown wavy hair, mustache, and eyes. Medical education, license revoked for conduct unbecoming a doctor. Peeping Tom affair. Hold. Number two, Ilka Chase, very attractive, age uncertain. Poses as author, lecturer, actress, and trained nurse. Wanted for fraud, shoplifting, cousinage, and barratry. Please hold. Number three, Bert Lahr, alias the Savage. Country boy, born in brick farmhouse and built like one. Description of face, impossible. Sending pictures. Wanted for assault, pedophagery, coggery, and mopery. Hold for barratry if you'll hold still. These three suspects operate as a group and are recently involved in a national lottery swindle. Believed to be somewhere in California, engaged in pseudo-medical racket. That is all.
Well, that gives you a rough idea of what you may expect, ladies and gentlemen. However, Lieutenant Wright neglected to state that the group is accompanied by Dr. Wilbur Hatch, who is in turn accompanied by his orchestra, purely for therapeutic purposes, I understand. If we open the doors to the clinic, perhaps we can get a line on what they mean by that. Therapeutic music. Very interesting. It's a shame I can't describe the effect of the therapy on the patient. But unless I'm greatly mistaken, here comes another patient. And he looks incredibly like Basil Rathbone.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
I've been searching this corridor for the offices of doctors...
Stafford, Chase, and Lahr?
That's it. The psychiatrists. Can't imagine why their names don't appear
on... Oh, they occupy the suite right ahead of you, sir. The nameplates were removed this morning. Little misunderstanding about billing, I think.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Are you a patient?
Well, are you?
I've been considering it.
Oh, nothing serious, I hope.
Well, not anymore. I used to have a very curious obsession, but psychoanalytic treatments cured me. Imagine I was being pursued by a whole horde of Hessian midgets.
Ugly little beggars in red suits?
That's right.
I think you could do with a few more treatments, old chap. Those midgets are still behind you.
The doctors will be expecting you, I suppose. Well, that's the nurse right there, Miss Ilka Chase.
Oh, thank you very much. How do you do? My name is Basil Rathbone.
Oh, please come in, Mr. Rathbone. Dr. Stafford is waiting for you.
Very restful surroundings. Excellent decor.
Yes, won't you sit down?
Thank you. I must confess I'm rather nervous. This is my first visit to a psychiatrist, you know.
Not really. Well, to look at you, one would never believe you hadn't had treatments for years.
I beg your pardon?
Well, I mean, you don't look a bit nervous. But you are getting rather heavy on my lap.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What do you suppose prompted me to sit on you?
Well, I shouldn't have worn this chair cover instead of a dress.
But I say there's nothing about you at all that resembles a seat.
It's a rather broad statement, Mr. Rathbone. here's Dr. Stafford. Do you want me, Doctor?
If you please, Miss Chase. In my office.
Excuse me, Mr. Rathbone.
Certainly. Who's the lean, hungry-looking individual out there?
Basil Rathbone. Likes to sit on women's laps.
Very pleasant disease. I just had a difficult patient. Thought I'd never get rid of him.
What did he have?
$200.
What did you treat him for?
$200.
Did you separate him from his, neurosis?
Painlessly. Fellow was just lazy. I told him to go home and tell his wife he was suffering from ergophobia.
Oh.
Prescribed a regime of healthful activities. Hop out of bed at the crack of dawn, take a brisk, ice-cold bottle of beer, and hop back in bed again.
Well, why didn't you tell him to get a job, work very diligently, save up another $200, and come here again?
I did, my dear. Will you bring Mr. Rathbone in?
Yes, Mooseface.
And stop calling me Mooseface.
I can't help it. It's a compulsion. This way, Mr. Rathbone.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Lahr?
Dr. Stafford. Dr. Lahr won't be back for a little while. Met with a slight accident last Saturday. That first step on the patrol wagon is deceptively high. He missed it entirely.
Patrol wagon?
He was handling a very resistive case, a stubborn policeman.
Yes. Would you mind reclining on that couch, please?
Well, I thought we were going to be alone, Doctor.
Not during the psychic history. Miss Chase will make notes until we're ready for free association. Please lie on the couch.
Very well. Would you mind moving over, Miss Chase?
Ilka, get off of there.
Oh, so sorry. I didn't realize what I was doing.
Yes. Miss Chase is suffering from a rare condition known as Plunger's syndrome. Disturbance of the fourth vasomotor ganglion. Can't resist a couch.
Must be a dreadful affliction.
Oh, I don't know. It's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Incidentally, that's the only cure. Now, shall we begin? I want you to tell me everything about yourself. Omit nothing. Are you relaxed?
Oh, perfectly, yes, perfectly. To begin with, I didn't come here because there's anything wrong with me.
Naturally.
I'm completely sane and normal in every respect. My appetite is prodigious, and I sleep as if I were bludgeoned. By avocation, I'm an actor, and I use the stage name of Basil Rathbone.
Are you the same Rathbone who plays Sherlock Holmes on the radio?
Plays Sherlock Holmes?
Here it comes.
My dear sir, I am Sherlock Holmes.
I see. And why did you come here, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, it isn't necessary for you to call me Holmes, Doctor. You may call me Rathbone. Everybody else does.
Oh. Yeah, but they don't know the truth, do they?
No. No, I've never divulged it before. However, that's not the reason I came to see you, Doctor. You see, it wasn't until a short time ago that I realized I wasn't exactly the same as other men.
Oh, this is the part I like.
Notes, Miss Chase.
Notes to you, Doctor.
Continue, please, Mr. Rathbone.
Well, everybody I know takes his earnings to the bank, deposits the money, and departs without giving the matter another thought. I, on the other hand, will have nothing whatever to do with banks.
You distrust them?
Well, it isn't that.
You keep your money under your mattress. Oh, I'd love to lie on it.
She's getting Plunger's syndrome again. I wouldn't dream of keeping my money under a mattress, really.
Oh, why not? At least you'd have something to fall back on.
The truth of the matter is, I feel an irresistible impulse to carry all my money with me.
You have it on your person right now?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. It's glued to my undershirt.
Mr. Rathbone, this money glued to your undershirt, is it a large sum?
Moderately. $10,000. In cash?
$20 bills.
Mr. Rathbone, how would you like to take a shower?
Ilka, get away from there. Mr. Rathbone is big enough to undress himself.
Oh, sorry.
I certainly am, Doctor. And I would appreciate it very much if you'd stop unbuttoning my waistcoat.
Oh, I was just straightening your wash chain. Of course, the tepid shower or crumbs lavage, as it's technically called, is definitely indicated in an obsession of your sort. We have a lovely shower.
Yes, yes, I wouldn't think of it. I detest shower baths, and besides, I like to have the money glued to my undershirt.
Who does your laundry? You know, I take in washing on the side, flat dry only.
Yes, that's very kind of you, Miss Chase, but I never have my undershirts laundered.
But doesn't that bundle disturb your sleep at night?
Oh, I take it with me to bed. I have a suit of pajamas made out of $100 bills.
Oh, that's reasonable.
Is there any particular reason you can't be without your money, Mr. Rathbone?
Yes. Yes, there is. I get cold. Literally freeze to death without it.
I see. You were born in England?
Wales.
Oh.
I was a bit child at the coal mines, born at Pontypridd, grew up in Carnarvon, and spent my early manhood at Merthyr Tydfil. I was left an orphan at the age of 9.
What did you do with it?
He turned it over to the orphan's home, of course. Continue, Mr. Rathbone.
Well, I was raised by my poor Welsh grandmother, whose sole means for support was hem-stitching. She was too feeble to do her sewing in town, so she just worked on the outskirts. Naturally, the grandson of a poverty-stricken sempstress could follow only one occupation, so my 10th birthday found me at Mumble's Colliery applying for a position as a pit boy. There were many young girls employed there at the time, but one in particular caught my fancy. Not a single day would pass, but what she would appear with some small favor for me. Cake, toffee, all sorts of wonderful things. She smuggled them to me in her apron to avoid the taunts of her co-workers. And it was about, well, when she was reaching 15, that I saw her approach me and I perceived she had something concealed beneath her dirndl. It was a Welsh pudding. I was growing up.
Miss Chase. Are you getting it?
How can I when he got it, when he's got it glued to his undershirt?
I mean his story.
I immediately fell in love with her. And as we rode together in the cage to the top of the mine shaft, I proposed marriage. We were locked in a lover's embrace as we reached the surface, and I was in complete oblivion until I heard the derisive laughter of the other girls. I was tremendously embarrassed when the loutish foreman strode over with fury written all over his face. So I remained with my eyes glued to the ground.
He's got a glue complex.
No wonder he got stuck on the girl.
The jealous foreman berated me in front of everybody. And as I cast malevolent glances at all those vulgar girls about me, he ordered me to take my pick and go below.
What did you do?
I chose a tall blonde, soon... Well... As I was saying, I chose a tall blonde, soon reached bottom, and gave her a good box on the ears. She never tormented me after that. Oh, dear. I'm getting so tired.
Well, if it's too warm in here, you can remove your coat, you know.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere.
No, I'm quite comfortable, thank you. Shall I continue with my adolescence?
Oh, yes. But I want you to keep talking while I confer with my colleague, Dr. Lahr. Miss Chase will remain with you and take notes. And Dr. Hatch will provide some stimulus music to help you recall incidents.
Very well, Doctor. But this money obsession of mine, can I depend on you to relieve me of the burden that I've carried all these years?
Don't worry, we'll relieve you of it.
Maybe we'll get rid of your obsession, too. Play something stimulating, Dr. Hatch. Fire away, Mr. Rathbone.
Well, when I'd saved enough money to journey to England, I found employment as a draper's assistant in a small shop.
I beg your pardon.
Hmm?
Do you happen to know Dr. Lahr by sight?
Yes, I do. Say, you're Dr. Stafford, aren't you?
I am, sir.
May I ask how Mr. Rathbone's getting on?
You may not. The doctor-patient relationship is inviolable, young man. How would you like me to tell everybody what's wrong with you?
Oddly enough, there isn't anything wrong with me. I have the recipe for a normal, happy life, Doctor.
Very interesting. I'm looking
for a good wife and lots of children.
Children are like precious jewels.
I'm quite sure.
A man's mind would crack without children.
Yes.
In the morning, the six of them dash in, and I'm refreshed by their lyrical laughter. Then at breakfast, the pleasure of their childish games. And when I come home at night, they begin to ply me with their endless questions. Then more questions, constant questions, questions, nothing but questions. So don't drive a man nuts!
When can you take my case, Doctor?
You're incurable. Where's Dr. Lars?
Well, I saw him enter the telephone booth in the lobby a few minutes.
The man's a footpad. If I wasn't an ethical member of the medical profession, I'd tear him from limb to limb.
Dr. Lars, control yourself. Come into the office quickly. Don't make a scene in the hall.
That oaf? What a toad. An uncultured aborigine. Am I overplaying it?
Settle down, Savage. What happened?
We gotta move out of this building. It's the superintendent. I was in the telephone booth in the lobby, having a private conversation with a delightful young lady.
Go on.
A beautiful girl. An old friend whose acquaintance I was trying desperately to make. There I was in a public telephone booth, having a private conversation with her. I hadn't occupied the booth for more than 20 minutes.
And the superintendent threw you out.
He threw his bolt down. What a narrow-minded bigot.
Did you see any patients?
I seen too many of them. Listen, Doc, I don't like working with those crackpots. They give me an inferiority complex.
Who did you treat?
I didn't treat any of them. We all went Dutch.
Look, will you stop taking these people into saloons?
Well, I gotta do something to relax my nerves. One guy thought he was covered with butterflies, and he was forever brushing them off.
Well, that shouldn't bother you.
I know, but he was brushing them on me. I'm sick of it. Can't we find an easier racket?
This is dignified, and there's a lot of dough in it. Besides, we've got a great patient in the other room. He gets cold if he hasn't got his money glued to his undershirt.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's play strip poker.
We can't. We mustn't be crude. Before we can remove his wad, we have to probe his psyche, uncover his inhibitions, and expose his asteriognosis.
I thought the dough was in his undershirt.
It is. But he won't part with it until we convince him he won't freeze.
Let me give him a massage while you give him a hot foot, eh?
Law, for a man whose intelligence quotient is in the minus division, you show occasional flashes of complete incoherence.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
Think nothing of it. We'll handle this patient carefully, and only with psychiatric treatment. Possibly, he'll respond to the power of suggestion.
Then I'll handle it. There's nobody more suggestive than I am.
Come back here. Our patient definitely belongs to one of these personality types. Isolation, cycloid, or schizoid. He's certainly not a hyperphrenic.
Of course not. What's that?
A hyperphrenic type is a person entirely devoid of any brains.
Well, what are you looking at me for?
Just thinking.
Dr. Stafford, I resent your sly innuendos.
Just ignore them.
I certainly shall. I can be just as ignorant as the next guy.
Even more. I think we'll have to try hypnosis. Maybe he'll remove his undershirt when he's in an hypnotic state. Did you ever hypnotize anybody?
Is it hard?
It should be very simple for you. If you can get him to stare at your face long enough, I'm positive it'll have some weakening effect on him.
I agree. I had to give up shaving with a mirror on account of that.
You don't shave with a mirror?
No, I use a razor. What time does Pick and Pat go on?
Well, I'll bring the patient in here, but be very careful. He's a cultured gentleman, an actor, Basil Rathbone.
Basil? Hunted fucks together in Injaw.
Well, get him in a receptive mood and then try hypnosis.
It won't be necessary.
I'll tell him you're British.
It won't be necessary. Bring in the patient, Doctor. He'll be delighted to see my kisser.
Oh, Miss Chase, will you please send Mr. Rathbone in here?
Coming, Doctor.
Well, bless my soul, Basil. It's good to see you, old chap.
I'm afraid you have the advantage of me, sir.
I say you must remember me. We met at Lady Fishley's, Duchess of Mawkish Puddles.
You'll have to forgive me, sir. I have a hideous memory for faces.
But then you have a hideous face.
Thank you.
I should know you, I suppose.
Mr. Rathbone, this is the eminent British psychiatrist, Dr. Lar. He wants to be alone with you.
As you wish, Doctor. Now, see here. I want you to have absolute confidence in me. Courage.
Courage.
Stiff upper lip. Chin up. Chin up.
Pucker.
Ready.
Splendid. You've heard of my work, I presume?
Can't say that I have, Doctor.
20 years at Tehachapi Prison. Interested in the criminal? Insane.
Tehachapi is a woman's institution.
I'm interested in women, too. You're British, I take it.
Welsh.
Oh, yes, yes, of course, of course, of course, Welsh. Dear old Cardiff. Aberystwyth. Laughing children returning from the Eisted Fod at Nynod Eppes. The family shanty in Brecknock Beacons. Ah, how clean was my alley.
You've spent some time in Wales?
My formative years, until I was 36. Arrested 3 times for stealing thimbles from the Plug and Feckleberry shop at Grufford Fute. I was a cheeky little nipper.
Did you have a practice in England, Doctor?
Dash it all, man. Are you pulling my leg?
Not at all.
Well, I wish you'd pull the left one a bit. I've got a crick in my hip. Thank you. That's better. I had the widest practice in all England.
London?
Provinces. 24 Throgs Be Mews, Grumpers on Bopesing, Neeps, Apes, Diddlem.
Your address?
Quite. Sounds a bit like a man after a heavy meal, doesn't it?
Yes. It'll bear repeating.
I dare say. I was knighted in 1911 by Edward VII and received the Order of the Bath from the Health Department April the 10th.
You should have taken it. Did you inherit any titles?
Inherit titles? Dozens!
Shooting box in Scotland?
Box? Great!
Aberdeen?
Invergoosie. I'd love you to have a gander at Invergoosie. Outside the gleaming gloaming of Glasgow. Behind the dreary dumps of Dundee. The county seat of my grandfather.
And you shot at your grandfather's seat?
When he wasn't looking. Now, about your condition. Do you drink?
Occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke?
Moderately. Go out with girls?
Well...
That's an important question, and it wants a straight answer, man. Do you go out with girls?
No.
Just as I thought. Schizophrenia complicated by Stunk's disease. Why don't you go with girls?
Well, my wife won't let me.
Inconvenient, isn't it? No matter, we'll find something else. Will you submit to hypnosis?
Gladly. Ian, if it'll tell you why I get cold when I don't have my money on me.
Well, we shall have a go at it. Mind if I dim the light?
Oh, not at all.
There. Now, look into my eyes. Relax and obey. I am your master. Gaze into my eyes.
You know, your eyes are remarkably like a pig's.
Silence! I command, you obey. I am the master, you are the slave. You are sleepy. Your senses are becoming numb. You are very sleepy.
This is jolly interesting. Shall I act sleepy?
The lights are not dim enough. Gaze into my hypnotic eyes. You will do exactly as I command. You are sleepy. Your lids are heavy. Your muscles are relaxing. Think to yourself, I am very sleepy. I cannot stay awake. I will sleep.
Look here, Doctor. Doctor, wake up.
What time is it?
You were trying to hypnotize me. You were doing very well, too, just before you fell asleep.
All right, let's have another go at it. A little soft music might help. Relax, sleep. You are slowly yielding to my power.
I wonder how Lars making out, Ilka.
No good.
Oh, don't be so pessimistic.
I never heard of such a queer neurosis. Rathbone claims he gets physically cold when the money isn't on his person.
They're coming out.
Well, good day, Dr. Lahn. Thank you very much.
Think nothing of it, Basil.
Good day, Miss Chase. Goodbye, Miss Dr. Stafford.
Goodbye, Miss Rathbone.
Ooh. Sort of chilly in here, isn't it?
Chilly.
I've never been so cold in my life.
It's a duel in January.
Well, goodbye.
A duel in January.
Savage, you got the money. How did you do it?
Nothing to it. As soon as I got him hypnotized,
ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast that might be coming from the Sports Palace in Berlin.
The
German dictator is taking his place on the podium, and as you can hear, the applause is deafening. Hitler looks considerably older. His hair is graying, and his features are somewhat haggard. He still wears the army uniform he swore he would never remove until victory. A victory that looks now more hopeless than ever. The applause is dying. Hitler is about to speak. I address you this evening on a matter of great urgency. I have just returned from a meeting with the Minister of Economics. And with Herr Goebbels. We have reached the decision. A decision that will affect the life of every person in Germany. The Americans and the British and the rest of the Allied nations. Have turned loose what appears to be their greatest strength in the recent air raids over the fatherland. Our Luftwaffe can no longer answer their challenge. We are being weakened for the coming invasion and drastic measures must be taken. Up to now, all workers in the Third Reich have been contributing approximately 60% of their earnings to the war effort, and they have contributed most of their food and nearly all of their time in the production of vital war weapons and ammunition. Now I come to tell you, not ask you, I come to tell you that you will have to give more. Your voluntary contributions have not been enough. Even though we make no promise of return. From now on, each of you will turn over his wages to a central depot and receive an allotment on which to live. No receipts will be given. No bonds offered. And if your clothing is not warm, if your meals are lighter, if your children have to go without milk, you will suffer in silence. You will suffer in silence and be happy in the thought that you are aiding your country.
Oh, why don't you stop that? Get off of that stand before I knock you off.
He exploded.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wasn't Hitler. And that speech didn't come from Berlin. But I can assure you that the German government would take such steps to get the money they need if they had to.
And believe me, they'll soon have to. Isn't it wonderful to be living in a country where people merely ask you to help? We have no Gestapo to check up on you to see if you're buying war bonds. And nobody here asks you to give anything. Just to lend it for a while at a pretty fair rate of interest. Well, it's just what you do when you put money in the bank, isn't it? And nobody ever had to plead with you to bank your money, did they? Sure, I know you think you're buying all the bonds you can without completely strapping yourself. But look here. Suppose you give up that weekly poker game. Or maybe cut down the stakes a little. Take a few dollars out of the money you might have lost and buy an extra bond. That's real winnings, brother. We've reached a very bitter stage in this war. We're nearing the climax now. And while we're all certain of victory, there's no use taking chances just because we didn't buy all the bonds we might have. Get in that ring, folks. Buy bonds. And let it be a real Sunday punch.
Castle Rathbone appeared through the courtesy of MGM, producers of the Technicolor musical Broadway River. This is John Brown saying goodnight. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.